Welcome, listeners, to a new episode of Criminal Mind, a brand new true crime podcast that delves into shocking cases that all tie into mental health. I'm Raviv, and I made sure that this week I was prepared on time, but then I got sick with a really bad sinus infection and I'm still sick, so this episode ended up being recorded a bit late. I apologize in advance for my voice. It's definitely still very congested, but I do feel well enough to record today, so I still wanted to pump this one out this week. Last week's case was so difficult to write, so for this episode, I got myself as focused as humanly possible, buckled down, and got this shit done so we could have a new episode this week. I really hope y'all are enjoying this podcast so far because I am so excited about where it's headed. This week's episode is about Kristen Gilbert, and this case was super different from the other four that we've talked about so far. A killer nurse from Massachusetts, poisoning her patients. It's honestly a super messed up story, and it kind of made my stomach turn a bit as I was researching. So, let's strap in and walk through the case of Kristen Gilbert together. With that, let's take a swim in the mind of a criminal. Welcome to Criminal Mind. Kristen Gilbert, a Massachusetts nurse and mother, had many people fooled. She was young, beautiful, blonde, a picture-perfect working woman who grew up in a sociology textbook definition family. Normal, many would say. Both of her parents worked regular jobs, she grew up in the suburbs, and she was academically intelligent. Despite all of these seemingly normal attributes, Kristen's mental health struggles actually began at a young age, during her teenage years, where many around her began to think that she was an oddball, according to All That's Interesting. In an article by Medium, it's reported that Kristen's behavior began to shift when her parents gave birth to another daughter, Tessa. Kristen was resentful, angry, jealous. She thought that her parents considered Tessa to be their favorite child. In 1984, she began showing some concerning signs to others, especially in her romantic relationships. Manipulation. Talks of being related to Lizzie Borden. Suicide threats, tricking them. While enrolled at Bridgewater State College in Massachusetts, she wrote up a fake suicide note that her ex-boyfriend would eventually find, claiming that she ate glass. The university ordered psychiatric treatment, and she ended up transferring to a different university instead to pursue a nursing degree. Quite odd, in my opinion, that someone who was now documented to have faked a suicide attempt and was ordered into treatment wanted to pursue a career in the medical field. She wanted to lie, and she wanted to manipulate others. It was something that just came naturally to Kristen. Did she just want attention, or was Kristen truly a disturbed young woman? Despite all of this, she successfully earned her nursing degree at Greenfield Community College in 1988, and even got married around this time as well, to a man named Glenn Gilbert. She began working at the Northampton Veteran Affairs Medical Center as a registered RN. Everything in her life continued on as normal, similar to her younger years, and she was rather well-liked at her job. She even had two children with Glenn, and it seems as if no one in her vicinity knew that she had a strong history of lying and manipulation lying right under her skin. At work, Kristen was social, kind, inviting. The other nurses agreed that she did her job well. What's odd about this, though, is that despite her coworkers stating that Kristen was a good nurse, they also noticed that there were a high number of deaths occurring under her watch, according to reporting done by the Murder Mafia. How can someone be so great at their job, with so many patients dying under her care? Those two thoughts just don't add up, especially in a field where making sure patients remain healthy is the primary goal. She was jokingly given the nickname Angel of Death, which just doesn't seem funny or sarcastic at all. If I was a colleague of Kristen Gilbert, my eyebrows would have been raised, and I wouldn't consider this pattern of regular patient codes to be a joke. Being given this nickname feels irresponsible and ignorant, seeing as Kristen was, quote, on duty for half of her ward's 350 deaths, end quote, over a course of 7 years, according to Medium. It's also worth noting that Kristen began a steamy affair with a security guard that worked at the VA Medical Center, Officer James G. Perrault. It didn't take long for Officer Perrault to catch drift of the rumors about the Angel of Death that were circulating around the hospital. Many of the patient deaths that were happening while she was on duty involved patients who were senior citizens, but not many had a history of heart problems, and many were dying of cardiac arrest. Outside of the VA Medical Center, Kristen's marriage was inevitably starting to crumble. That might be an understatement, though. She was engaged in an illicit affair and wanted her husband Glenn completely out of the picture. While at home, she began to lace the home-cooked meals she prepared for Glenn with poisonous drugs. Glenn was unaware and ate the meals without hesitation. He ended up hospitalized with low potassium and glucose levels, but it wasn't enough to kill him. Kristen struck again later on, hell-bent on getting rid of her husband, and tried to inject him with a poisonous needle while he was receiving care at a different hospital than the one she worked at, Cooley Dickinson. Aggressive in nature, she pinned him against the wall and attempted to inject a clear liquid into his arm, but failed. And once Glenn was released, she left him and her family, according to an article by All That's Interesting. The cloud of confusion around Kristen Gilbert continued to get bigger when nurses at the VA Medical Center started to take their Angel of Death joke more seriously. Patients trusted their nurse at first, but more and more men were dying under her watch, and none of them knew about her history of mental illness. Aside from her pretend glass-eating suicide threat, there was another particular ploy that was far more than just an attention-seeking ruse. A year after the suicide threat, she was working as a home health aide and burned a small child in the bathtub. It's impossible to know definitively if this was intentional, but over 60% of the child's body was burned. And what's even more alarming is that this family's bathtub was rigged to ensure that the water reached a certain temperature. Just based on those two facts alone, it can absolutely be assumed that it was intentional. She was reported to her supervisor, but no repercussions came from it. Those around her at the VA Medical Center lightly joked and whispered in secret about the continuous string of deaths that occurred during her shifts, but I think that if they knew anything about these past two instances in particular, it would no longer be a silly joke. The narrative at the VA Medical Center was that she wanted to impress her new boyfriend, Officer Perrault. The idea was simple: create a scenario where she saved lives instead of stealing them, and Perrault would view her as a hero. A smart, beautiful, young nurse. Why would anyone paint her as anything but, despite the rumors? Patients actually started to catch drift of those rumors as well, though, but their concerns were brushed off because they were usually either old or deemed to be delusional. Kristen worked at a veterans hospital, where many of the patients had psychological trauma. So when comparing her to those she treated, trusting her word over theirs was the norm. In July 1995, an older patient by the name of Stanley J. Jagodowski was admitted to the VA Medical Center for a bowel obstruction post-surgery. And this is where the suspicions surrounding Kristen finally began to unravel. Stanley just needed oral medication for his condition. No needles, no injections, nothing other than oral medication. A nurse that was on duty with Kristen allegedly heard Stanley writhing in pain in his room and saw Kristen go in with a syringe in hand. Again, he didn't need any medication that required an injection. Stanley died later that evening, and this particular account was the catalyst to both nurses and patients turning on her. Patients did not want to be treated by her. They were petrified that they weren't going to make it out of the VA Medical Center alive. Kristen was fully in control of her own narrative. She was a competent nurse, one who knew how to twist her actions to make it look like instead of killing patients, she was actually doing everything she could to save them. So how did she do this? It was actually a pretty simple operation. Many nurses on staff noticed that the hospital was experiencing a shortage of epinephrine, which is essentially a last chance dose of adrenaline used to treat cases of anaphylaxis or restart the heart in the event of cardiac arrest. Although epinephrine can be, and is, used in a life-saving manner, too large of a dose, especially when used on a healthy heart, is fatal and can induce cardiac arrest. Kristen Gilbert manufactured an easy pattern: inject patients with a fatal dose of epinephrine, and then attempt to revive them when they go into cardiac arrest. The twister is, a VA police officer had to be present during any attempts to resuscitate a patient. This was the hospital's rule. Kristen's boyfriend, Officer James Perrault, was always there whenever she attempted to revive a patient that she intentionally injected with unnecessary epinephrine. It was a carefully crafted acting performance, and one that nobody at the hospital was able to connect the dots to until more patients succumbed to her ruse. The patients that she injected did not need epinephrine injections. Based on reporting by Medium, they were all elderly, but had healthy hearts, and should not have just gone into cardiac arrest. When hospital staff finally noticed that vials of epi were missing, they finally filed reports. The fact that no other doctors or nurses formally addressed their concerns before this point is the most shocking part about this case, especially since they joked about Kristen being the angel of death for quite some time beforehand. She was smart, young, a nurse that was competent, well-educated. Her history of violence was merely in the background. It just didn't seem likely to staff that Kristen could be a serial killer, or even a criminal at all. She worked in Ward C, which was deemed an intensive care unit, where many of the patients suffered from chronic illnesses. This type of unit seemed to aid Kristen in masking her activity, even though the manner of her patients' deaths was mysterious. When Kristen realized that there were eyes on her, she went as far as calling in a fake bomb threat to throw off the investigators. She quit her job at the VA Medical Center, feeling the heat of the investigation, and attempted to commit suicide. This landed her in a psychiatric ward, where she called her boyfriend, Officer Perrault, and made a not-so-shocking confession on the line. Quote, "I did it. I did it. You wanted to know? I killed all those guys by injection," end quote, as quoted on All That's Interesting. There was no use in trying to conceal her actions any longer. The missing IV bags of epinephrine, along with the timing of the patient's deaths and the manner of them, pinned Kristen to a wall. Officer Perrault broke off the relationship upon her confession, and I think at this point, she knew that there was nothing she could do to reverse what was coming for her. She confessed to Perrault over the phone. Investigators were locking down evidence. She was on duty for more than half of the 350 patient deaths that occurred in her ward while she worked there. It was game, set, and match. But Kristen wasn't going to fall without a hard fight. And once released from the hospital, she booked it for Perrault's apartment. He planned to testify against her in court, and she was going to do whatever it took to stop him from revealing the details of her phone confession. She attempted suicide again. He ended up testifying in court, and Kristen was hospitalized once again. This was all a manipulation tactic. She knew exactly what would garner attention and what would get eyes off of her crimes temporarily. Before she was put on trial for the murders of multiple patients, she was actually arrested first for another fake bomb threat. For that alone, she was sentenced to prison for 15 months. During her initial prison stay, investigators were still working to recover more information about the deaths of some of her patients. They exhumed the bodies of 4 victims so they could be examined further, and this is what finally buried Kristen Gilbert. Upon examination of their tissue samples, all of the victims' bodies contained high levels of epinephrine. This was it. all of the suspicions that the hospital staff had about Kristen, the missing bags of Epi. The pieces were coming together seamlessly, and she had nowhere left to hide. The trial against Kristen Gilbert began in late 2000, and prosecutors did not hesitate to paint a colorful picture of her psyche. Her defense lawyer went just as hard to protect his client, claiming that the affair with Officer Perrault is what triggered her behavior, and that nobody technically saw her inject any of the victims with epinephrine. But remember, there was already a confession. She told Perrault that she did in fact kill her victims over the phone while she was institutionalized. Kristen was facing the death penalty, and with a history of manipulation, suicide threats, attempted suicide, and multiple psychiatric hospitalizations, the jury had to decide whether or not to spare her. Although Massachusetts banned the death penalty years prior, her case was federal, so the death penalty was on the table as an option if convicted of murder. When one of Kristen's colleagues testified during the trial, Nurse Kathy Ricks, it became even more clear just how much epinephrine Kristen was using to kill her patients. Kathy Ricks had counted 3 containers of epinephrine in a medicine supply closet during one of her shifts at 4 p.m. Only 1 hour later, she saw all 3 containers empty in the needle disposal bin, and this was just after an emergency call had occurred with Kristen Gilbert, according to the New York Times. She knew. Other nurses had started putting the pieces together. So, no, nobody physically saw her injecting patients with epinephrine, but the circumstances became too obvious to ignore. Glenn Gilbert, Kristen's ex-husband, as well as her lawyers, begged the jury to spare her from the death penalty. Kristen had 2 sons with Glenn, both of whom she hadn't seen in years, but in a statement made to the jury, child psychologist Cynthia Monahan, who treated one of her sons at the time, stated, quote, "He believes that the execution of their mother, Kristen Gilbert, would have a profound and profoundly detrimental impact on his children and their well-being," end quote, as quoted by the Hartford Courant. I found this rather interesting because she abandoned her family to be with Officer Perrault. This included her sons. She didn't just leave Glenn. Who knows how long it had been since she had actually spoken to her children or been a present mother to them? Did the kids even know what was going on with their mother or understand it? Based on what the child psychologist said in court, it seems like they did speak about it during their therapy sessions, but that statement could have also just been a lie to help Kristen avoid the death penalty. If it looked like her 2 children were going to suffer at all, and that was presented in court, the jury absolutely could have taken the side of the children and decided to do what would have been best for them. In this case, that would have been keeping Kristen alive. The jury was exhausted. The case was exhausting. Both sides were trying to argue what kind of human being Kristen was. A monster? Or simply just a human being? A demon with no regard for human life? Or someone who was mentally ill and incapable of understanding what she was doing? Relatives of her victims testified in court, adding to the sheer rawness and emotional turmoil that surrounded this case. On March 14th, 2001, Kristen Gilbert was finally convicted of murder, and the only thing left was for her sentence to be decided. Would Kristen receive the death penalty, or did her lawyers make a strong enough argument to spare her life? The federal jury ultimately decided to sentence her to life in prison instead of the death penalty. If she had been given the death penalty, she would have been the only woman in Massachusetts on death row. What I find the most interesting about her sentencing is that, according to ABC News, there was no audible reaction to her sentencing. Family members of the victims cried silently, but there was no argument, no outrage. not a single person tried to object or speak out against Kristen Gilbert's sentencing. Everyone was in agreement that she was a cold-blooded murderer. There was no arguing against that. The argument against her humanity was also something that I didn't expect to read about when I was researching this case. I didn't really think that it would be brought into question. A nurse who intentionally killed her patients with high doses of unnecessary epinephrine to impress her boyfriend, the one that she was having an affair with. It just feels like a pretty cut and dry case, with many witnesses and a documented history of struggles with mental illness. I'm not sure how arguing back and forth about whether or not she was a monster helped the case much. She was either going to prison, or she was being executed by lethal injection, so it felt far past the point of trying to attempt and push the humanity argument. Kristen Gilbert is now 53 years old, living her life out in prison. There have been no new updates that I could find on her time in prison, her family members, or her crimes. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in to another episode of Criminal Mind. The case of Kristen Gilbert was one that I found on an internet thread about mentally ill criminals, and this one stuck out like a sharp-ass needle. It gave me Dr. Death vibes, if you guys know anything about that podcast or story. I feel like we see this a lot in the medical world. Doctors or nurses gone rogue who begin harming their patients. If you found this podcast episode interesting, I really highly recommend checking out Dr. Death. Initially a podcast, it was just turned into a TV show that was released on Peacock, and it has a really similar storyline base. Check out either, see what you think. It's truly captivating media. Anyway, I really want to know what y'all are thinking about this podcast so far. Any feedback at all would be super appreciated. You can reach out to me on socials at IamRevive across the board. Message me, tweet me, anything. Just let me know what your thoughts are. If there's anything that can be improved, etc., etc. If you like what you're hearing so far, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, rate us 5 stars, and share with all your true crime addicted friends. See you next time, and hopefully not with a sinus infection. Love, Revive.